on.
I hope any of you who can stay around will stay around. We've been given an extension on the room, and so we'll probably run over maybe by 10, 15 minutes and keep this dialogue going. I'm Betsy Robinson. I'm one of the three organizers. Before we get back into, I hope, maybe a free-for-all round table, all of you asking questions, people who snuck in halfway through, don't be shy. Even if you repeat a question that was asked before, it's ground worth covering again, so let's all speak. But before we do that, I would like to, again, thank Professor David Potter and the University of Michigan for making it possible for us to bring in this fabulous, diverse, and fascinating group of students. And I think it may be fair to say, once the recording devices go off and when we're milling around and cleaning up, my sense is these are open, friendly people. Come up and begin that little bit of networking. Shake a hand and say hello before you go, if you can bring up the nerve. And we have a first question.
This is a short question because I got inside after it started. And this is very interesting, and I have friends at home that might need to learn this. You said you're recording this. Where is this going to be displayed? On what site?
We're still working it out. This is being recorded, and it will be hosted somewhere on the APA website, and it will show up somewhere, and you'll get spammed about it. I think something will go out to the university, to everybody.
This is really good. Thank you.
So I graduated in 2011, so I'm already a little bit removed, and in kind of the intern process I've had to take kind of a more traditional job at a grocery store. And it sounds like you guys have had more direct kind of staying in your field or in kind of directions you thought you might be going. And I don't really hear about these lapses of time where you're stuck kind of just making ends meet. So I'm at a point of management, which is somewhat successful. There's a lot of transferable skills, but applying to museums where there might be some type of negative connotation to that. And I was wondering if you could speak on that. Is this something I should be embracing and putting on the resume? Is this something I should be taking off?
I mean, I can try to address part of that because, as I said, I answered 1-800-NGS-LINE for, and it works, you can try that, for a couple months. And that was my way of getting in the door. And I was pretty much determined I was going to take those kinds of jobs until, you know, they gave me the corner office on the magazine. That never happened, by the way. It's one of those things that I think it's not necessarily you have to tell every single thing you've been doing, but you might want to recast it in such a way as, here's the skills that I have exhibited. Management, time, you know, if you have a team of people that you've been managing. I know some of my friends who have been away because they had families, and they took 10 years off basically between job to job. What they're now finding is they're recasting their resumes in such a way that, here are the skills I have. Oh, and by the way, here's where I got those skills. So that's not literally a smaller font, but it's sort of looking at it not so much from more of a traditional CV approach as it is a skills summary. So maybe that would be helpful, since then you can highlight that you've been doing something and, you know, you've been doing it successfully.
Yeah, and I would strongly second that. And from my talk, you probably remember that I was manually data entering things for summers on end. That is just the reality. I found that two things that I thought were helpful. One is when recasting how you present that job or that skills and so forth that you do. Remember that, you know, we're used to thinking of as a CV as an objective thing that you have, and it's the same no matter who is looking at it. A resume in some ways is quite different. It sums you up for the purposes of a particular position. And I had no compunction at all about creating five different versions of my resume that emphasized and stressed different things depending on the very job that I was applying to. And so in some cases I omitted certain details or added others. In other cases, I would recast things. You know, if I had worked at a grocery store, I might have talked about inventory management and, you know, things like this, depending on the type of job I'm looking for, or maybe emphasize more of a customer service type of aspect. There are lots of ways to paint this picture. One of the best books, and it's a perennial classic that has to be mentioned at every panel, is, of course, What Color Is Your Parachute? By Richard Bolis, and he goes through a lot of the fine points about how to do this well and how to jump careers and make those skills seem more transferable than you might suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was in the informational interview phase and going into administration, sort of the best piece of advice I got was that I should suppress my academic CV and prepare a resume that looked more like the business and administrative kind of work that I was doing, even in higher education. It is a very different kind of document. And one of the things that you can use the informational interviews is to ask people, you know, gee, what should I put into this? Here's mine the way I have it now. Do you think there are ways that I could beef it up and make it look different that would serve the purposes better? And by the way, if there's a question later, we can talk more about informational interviews, which I think are really important. But basically, the CV mindset is something that you want to try and move away from. And What Color Is My Parachute is a great place to start working on that. But looking at comparable examples, talking with people about them is very important as well.
you talk quite a bit about convincing your prospective employer about your transferable skills. I'm wondering if perhaps you guys can also comment on how you dealt with perhaps the issue of not having as much work experience as other candidates, because presumably if you've gone all the way through from your undergrad to your PhD, I was fortunate enough to get some work experience taking a bit of a break, but I know plenty of my colleagues haven't had that chance, and I can imagine that would be a bit of a difficulty convincing your employers. Not only do you have the great skills, but how do you make up for that work experience?
That's why the informational interview is so important. I was very serious when I talked about getting around the gatekeepers. The point of the frontline personnel office is to keep people out of the company who will embarrass the frontline personnel office. It's not to add imagination to the process. It's not to add creativity. They claim that it is, but in fact, it's not. And so you want to go to the highest executive you can find, and what I encourage you to do is figure out where you want to work, make up an excuse to be there, because like when you used to approach the old Kresge Foundation, you never said, I was going to Detroit to talk to the Kresge Foundation. They hated it if you wasted money on that. You always said, I'm coming to talk to a donor. By the way, I want to talk to you as well when I'm in town. Lie to your informational interview. Say, gee, I'm going to be in Washington for a week or two. I'm really interested in learning about some stuff while I'm there. Can I have an hour of your time, half an hour of your time? People will grant it. It's an interesting break in your day for those who are in positions, interesting way for you to learn. Bring along a copy or offer to email afterwards a copy of your CV or resume or both. And be there in a position where you're not asking for a job, but what you're doing is you're letting people know about you, so when they think of a position that comes up or a connection that might be made, they get back to you on it without your having to explicitly ask for a job and circumventing that part of the process. Because you're right, to a certain extent, you don't look like a traditional candidate. Well, if you don't look like a traditional candidate, the way to get a job is to not act like a traditional candidate. So be creative in the way you approach the positions.
I was just going to add, when I applied for the job at the World Monuments Fund, which was just listed in a normal, you know, I think it actually came through the AIA, and we had gotten a grant at my site from the World Monuments Fund 5 years before or something like that, and we had turned in our grant budgets and reports on time, so we had a decent reputation as, you know, someone who could understand practicalities and things like that. But when I applied for that job, I also called up the grants manager and said, hey, I used to work at Aphrodisias, and maybe you remember. And I know for a fact later that she put my resume sort of, oh, yeah, we know that girl. You know, I have no idea, but, you know, she didn't really know me well or what I would do at the place. But all these, you know, funders and things like that you've been working with indirectly or directly throughout your careers, all these foundations, calling them up or asking someone even in a middle rank there saying, what's it like to work there? What kinds of things do you need, you know, should I know? You have connections to these places that you don't necessarily realize you do. I'm not sure exactly how I got that job, honestly. I think I was quite lucky, but I think that was part of it, was that they'd heard of my site and that we had a reputation for being responsible. Another thing I wanted to mention about learning about the people at these organizations and what kinds of things they say about themselves. I know we are all, this might seem awfully obvious, but the About section of any website, and when they have the profiles of the top people in those places, you'll see that some of them have strange backgrounds or unusual things like PhDs or places that they've worked or interests that they have. Finding out how these people present themselves and their criteria, you know, their backgrounds and things like that is a helpful way to help you figure out how to kind of steer your own story to fit what they want to hear. I think that is one way to just think about how you're narrating your story. You can look at those places where you want to be.
I just wanted to second that. Face-to-face personal connections, you can't overestimate them. They're so important. And if you're on the ground somewhere, actually speaking to someone, actually, you know, making a personal face-to-face meeting with them, that'll make a big difference. I mean, as it did for you, as it has for any of us, for sure.
And I think some of that's easier even than easier than in 1996 when I was trying to storm through the doors. We didn't have Facebook. You know, it was actually hard to find out. You couldn't Google anyone. Google wasn't a verb yet. So I think, you know, thinking about networking, I have this theory there's really only 400 people in the world because I keep running into them. It's that or someone knows somebody who knows somebody. So kind of looking at that aspect as well. And then to the other thing, when I went that cold call to, you know, because they needed me. I had my cape on, and no, I did not. I actually took, because her questions seemed to be about detail-oriented and grammar, I took writing samples with me, and I had done the hand-drawn illustrations for Diocletian's Palace journal that was published. I took that stuff with me, and I didn't end up actually using much of it, but at least I had examples of what I was trying to tell her on the phone that I was capable of. So,
yeah, I think I mentioned that too, you mm-hmm. know, to have some sort of a dossier with you. Mm-hmm. In my company, I only ever see probably about 1 in 20 applications that come in because we have a HR person, right? You know, and their job is to screen applicants. And yet, you know, I'm the one ultimately who's making the call about, you know, whether to hire someone or whether to interview them. So any kind of sideways, you know, connection, personal, the informational interview is definitely a way to go. Some companies also ask you to do some sort of an exercise as part of the interview process. So I know that we do this. So once you have an initial interview for a half an hour, and then we send you an exercise, and it's a Excel spreadsheet, and it's a kind of like a PowerPoint presentation, you know, really for us to understand, you know, you have your skills. If you have a situation where you get one of these exercises, take it very seriously, because I'm always surprised that about half of the applicants that we give this to, you could tell they spent about an hour on it, you know, and you know, that's just, you know, their application is over at that point.
When you go in for an informational interview, how should you be comporting yourself? What should you be bringing to the table there? Or should you just have a list of questions about the person?
Let me start and we'll work down the row. Here are the rules for informational interviews. It's not a time to ask for a job. The way you get it is you say, I was talking with so-and-so, or I saw such-and-such, and I would like to come and talk with you so I can learn more about your industry. I'm thinking of making the transition from the academy into whatever it is you're doing, and I would like to have a chance to just talk with you as someone who is experienced and to learn. It is very, very rare that one would turn down that kind of a request. Okay? The next stage is you bring with you, I would encourage you to bring with you a copy of your CV and resume. So if the person you're meeting with says, gee, give me a copy of your CV and resume, then you've got it. If they don't ask, don't offer it because you're there getting information. On the other hand, half an hour after you're done with them, you email them and say, thank you very much for giving me the time. I really appreciate it. I really learned a great deal. By the way, I'm attaching a copy of my resume. If something should come up that you think I might be interested in, please feel free to get in touch with me or to pass this along. And then it falls into network. And because you're doing this at the top, those people are connected. And so it works out. One anecdote. Guy came to me who said he was interested in shifting from adjunct teaching into higher education administration. Had a doctorate in philosophy, was a couple of years out. This was in the last few months. And as we were talking, and I was explaining what it was like to work for and how to apply for jobs within the federal system, I said, by the way, were you Phi Beta Kappa? And he said, yeah. I said, good, okay. That same night, I was at a dinner, and I was sitting next to the secretary of Phi Beta Kappa, who I know has a degree in philosophy, which is why I asked the kid that question. I said, by the way, I met someone this afternoon who you might want to talk to. And the Phi Beta Kappa secretary said, boy, that's great because we're starting a brand new initiative on looking at the role of higher education, and I'd love to have someone who has, you know, higher education experience, degree certification, working on this new initiative looking at policy stuff. Within 2 weeks, this kid had an interview. Now, that's the way informational interviews ought to work. By the way, I don't know if he actually got the job. And I think not, because I haven't heard back from him after the interview. But, you know, that's the role of these and how they ought to function, in my sense.
I mean, I don't really... The whole informational interview probably wasn't necessarily part of my experience, just because of I took sort of a custom path, you know. But I would say, in general, when I have talked with people, because I used to manage the interns for .com, NationalGeographic.com, you know, and I would get these earnest folks in their senior or even first year in grad school coming through, and, you know, they were trying to figure out what they wanted to be when they grew up. Most of them invariably were geography majors, you know, so there was a whole lot of teaching them how to interact with adults, as it were. And it was sort of reaching out to, you know, not just how do you dress yourself for that kind of interview, but also, you know, don't necessarily reach out and expect that they're going to offer you a job at the end of the discussion, but get their card, hold on to it, because as I said, everybody knows everybody else, and that you never know how knowing that conversation might lead to something else down the path. I mean, I've had people I've run into at conferences 10 years ago. I show up at a meeting at their museum to do their project, and they're sitting there, and I'm like, I know you. So for me, at least, it's networking more than an informational interview, but that's just my world. So
I wanted to mention something, just a kind of trick that I use. I'm now in my fourth career, right? So I've had these transitions, and during those transitions, which are, you know, fraught with anxiety, what am I really doing? Did I make the right decision? What do I want to do next? What's it going to look like? I order business cards from Vistaprint.com for $5 shipping, right? The free business cards, and I try out what I think I might want to do. Okay, so I make business cards, and, you know, it's like, you know, a cello teacher, you know. I do play cello, but it's not unrealistic. But, you know, what do I want to do next? And it makes it real. It's reifying, you know, and it helps you try that out. Another tip is you probably have, if you're young, have Facebook. You probably have academia.edu as well. You may not have LinkedIn or a developed LinkedIn presence, right? And LinkedIn is the professional network, right? So you want to kind of take a look at that, and that's going to be resume style rather than CV. Get that CV out of there. It's going to be resume style, skill set, and the other interesting thing about LinkedIn is are the groups, the communities. And so I joined maybe 20 when I made my transition out of government into my business, 20 that had to do with either organizational development or entrepreneurship or data visualization, which were the fields I was sort of in, just to lurk, just be a lurker. And it takes a lot of time, I admit. And the other tip is Twitter, that you know, if you use Twitter properly, you are reading the footnotes of the leading thinkers in your field as they're thinking. It's what they're reading, what they're thinking about. So you identify the model of the person you'd like to be like and see what they're tweeting. And it's really good stuff.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention about working in the nonprofit world. Most nonprofit organizations have a division between program people and administration and development people. And these, most of us would think that we want to work in the programs, right? That's the content, that's the creation of agendas and deciding what happens. And I did work in programs, but my value there and what would have been also valuable is the fundraising people and the PR people often turn over very quickly, right? Fundraising especially, because nobody says when they're 6 years old, I'm going to grow up to be a fundraiser. And I don't mean to disparage fundraisers by saying that, but it's just not something, because it sounds just, I'm going to grow up to do something around other people, which is hard to see as exciting when you're young. But good development people, as we now call fundraisers, who actually master and take the time to master the content of programs are worth their weight in gold, because many, many of those people have sort of gotten that career and they say, well, I need to write a letter, I need to approach a donor, and you see right away that they're just sort of smiling and enthusiastic but don't really know a lot about what's going on in their organization, and they always go to the programs people for the information. If you apply for a development department job, you can, and you demonstrate that you can master the deep content of that organization, you will be just valued enormously. And the same goes for PR. And PR is just a matter of taking complex information and explaining it to people and writing it in this very certain format that's easy to learn. But, so.
I want to just add one quick thing. You had mentioned LinkedIn versus Facebook. Mm-hmm. Nary the twain should meet. Mm-hmm. If you go into LinkedIn and look up my name, you're going to get, I like to think, a pretty professional, straightforward, this is what I do, this is who I am, here are my links, these are the awards. You're not going to see my Facebook profile, number one, because I have it blocked, and you're not going to read my clever, pithy, snarky comments about whatever. I keep those two. Now, there's people who have access to both, but they're my friends. Think about that. I mean, we've all heard that, you know, that future employers are going to Google you and they're going to find out your vacation pictures and stuff. Think about that when you're making those kinds of posts. I chose to make LinkedIn my professional face, and then Facebook is my goofy weekend persona. So, anyway, sorry.
Well, I think we should just thank our panelists for coming out here and sharing.